It's damaged control at the White House as the U.S. prepares for a default. Another Chinese property developer misses a loan payment and defaults. And as Americans head back to work, demand slows. All that and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today, where we don't just talk about the news and the economy. We talk about how it impacts you. And today, the story of the debt ceiling has gone to another level. The market is starting to get nervous as the U.S. looks at a potential default coming, but not where you think. I know where you think that they're talking about default. No, I'm also leave that as a surprise for you. But let's look at the story, because there was some hope today that looks like it's, well, not all that hopeful. And I want to show you what the U.S. is actually preparing for. Let's start out with the story. We head over to Zero Hedge, where Manchin digs in and won't budge on the $1.5 trillion top line, says no to filibuster carve out for the debt hike. Now, we know this from Senator Joe Manchin, Democrat of West Virginia. He is stuck on that $1.5 trillion number, but that didn't last too long, because shortly thereafter, we hear this from Jake Sherman, that Leader McConnell just told a closed meeting of Senate Republicans that he would offer a short-term debt ceiling extension today or an expedited reconciliation process. And of course, as you can imagine, the Democrats realize this was indeed a trap. And the early news on that is that they're not interested, because they know what game is being played. But this is a big gamble on both sides, because the stakes are really high. Let me show you what's at stake if we don't raise the debt ceiling in time. And here you go over to the Washington Post, where we see the U.S. default this fall would cost 6 million jobs and wipe out $15 trillion in wealth, says study. Now, I want you to think about why the stakes are so high here, because you have all these people coming off extended federal unemployment benefits, coming off state benefits, and we're expected to see on Friday how tons of them went back to work. We'll talk about the ADP report here in a little bit, but I just want you to keep in mind, if we lose 6 million jobs now, what does that tell you is going to happen to the economy? Are we going to have this massive boom that everyone's been talking about, or are we going to have another deep recession that we can't dig out of because we have no budget? So keep that in mind of what direction this is actually going. Of course, we know the GOP signals refusal to help Democrats raise the debt ceiling in opposition to President Biden's spending plans. Let's take a look at how serious this issue is. And we head over to Mark Zandi. He says the United States could plunge into an immediate recession if Congress fails to raise the debt ceiling and the country defaults on its payment obligations this fall. It gets even worse, as we know that 6 million jobs will potentially be lost. And he said that the downturn would be comparable to that suffered during the financial crisis of 2008, if you can imagine. And he is with Moody's Analytics. The debt limit is the maximum amount of debt the Treasury can issue to pay the country's bills. It was suspended in 2019 through the beginning of last month under a deal reached during the Trump administration. If Congress fails to raise it, as we should know by now, the Treasury would be unable to pay the debts as they come due. And hang on to that, because again, I know exactly which debts you think they're not going to pay. You're going to be wrong. You'll see. That's not what you think, because the U.S. government's never missed a bond payment. So don't worry. That's not what they're thinking. And the question is, would they pay? They'd have to face some choices, such as whether to pay $20 billion owed to seniors on Social Security or fail to pay its bondholders, which we've never done. But nevertheless, this would also have an impact on global markets. He actually thinks, and somewhere he says stock prices, here you go, will be cut by one third. Could be a massive buying opportunity for some people. But he also thinks, and he says that the stocks would rebound quickly once resolved. But he also believes that Treasury yields, mortgage rates, and other borrowing costs will spike. Well, that's where we turn to our friend Ed Harrison from Bloomberg, who posts on Twitter today and says, by the way, default would be bullish for bonds in his opinion. Why? Because it's about willingness. And this is, I want you to understand, it's about willingness, not ability to pay. All we have to do is raise the debt ceiling and we can borrow money to pay on our debts. Isn't that great? Borrow money to pay on our debts. And in case, he says, and so long duration treasuries will rally big time on the prospect of a recession and financial crisis. And this is where people get the bond market wrong. I'm going to show you how wrong they are in that. But first, Let me show you what the White House was preparing for, because remember, the belief right now is the U.S. is going to stop making interest payments on its debt, perhaps not handle T-bill redemption as they come due. We've never, ever done that. But let's look over to the White House so you can see what they have to say about this. And we here you see a default would fundamentally hinder the federal government from serving the American people. No doubt about that. Payments from the federal government that families rely on to make ends meet would be endangered. The basic functions of federal government, including maintaining national defense, national parks, and countless others, would be at risk. This would include the public health system, which has enabled the country to react to the global pandemic. It would be unable to adequately function, and this would lead to a serious and protracted financial and economic crisis, which of course we know as President Biden would not want this. So what I want you to understand is the U.S. isn't talking about defaulting on its debt. It's talking about defaulting on you, its own citizens, your Social Security payments, your Medicare payments, veterans payments. You don't believe me? Look at the rest of this article, because if we go down, they talk about, hey, Social Security, health insurance, and veterans programs. And we know that federal employees in the past, because we've been down this path before, this will not be the first time that we don't have a budget and the government shuts down if that is to happen. And what's happened before? Furloughs, missed payments. But what we did not miss payments on is the debt, because as the global reserve currency, we've talked about this, the most important thing is to make sure that people understand that your money is good. When you borrow from the U.S. government, that your money is good and you will get it back, and they will prioritize that at the expense of the American taxpayer. If we go down this road, that's probably the odds outcome. We've seen it happen in the past. And here, let me show you how bond investors get this wrong. And we can already see credit default swaps surging to insure against a U.S. default. So what is a credit default swap? It is an insurance against a bond default. And I want to show you what's happened. So look here. You see in late 2013, early 2014, this prices on these were up. So that was pricing in a potential default. It happened again in late 2015, and it's happening now. So the question you should be asking is, how does this impact the bond market? Well, I'm glad you asked, because let's go here to look at 30-year yields, and what do we see? Late 2013, early 2014, yields back up and then go on a massive move lower. And then how about 2015? Where is that? Late 2015, right in here, yields are backing up, and boom, they go lower. And so let's look at what bond investors are doing. Well, TLT, which is the largest traded long-term treasury bond ETF, is seeing massive outflows, the amount not seen since March of 2020. So you've seen retail investors, money managers that are allocating to the bond, to treasuries, dumping this when I just showed you what is likely to happen, and that means bond prices would go up. And this is showing flows. This is not showing the price of TLT, in case you're wondering. And then this, I showed up on Twitter earlier, the 20-year Treasury bond ETF, same one, TLT short interest. You see the short interest rising as of middle of last month. Likely that number is higher. So what you have is, as Ed Harrison pointed out, well, the potential is the opposite is going to happen, because history has shown that once this is resolved, that yields go down, bond prices go up, and if a lot of people are short, they're going to get squeezed out, and if people have sold, they're going to be chasing it back in. And why do I think people are selling some of this? It's because they need cash. I think that's why. I think they're worried their T-bills will not be money good, so they're trying to raise cash by selling notes and bonds. Now let's head over and see what the Fed's doing, because the Fed is doing something here too to keep this up, to keep bond prices up, to keep rates in check. In fact, let's take a look and see what the Fed's up to. We head over to the Global Money Dispatch from Zoltan Pozsar of Credit Suisse, considered one of the foremost experts in the banking system. And he's talking about this money that's coming into the banks and these large G-SIBs. So what is a large G-SIB? It's a global systematic important bank. If you have money in one of the large eight U.S. commercial banks, your money is being backed by treasuries. And if you didn't know that, You must be new to the show, but let me show you this. It says, second, on balance, about half of the stimulus money queuing in fiscal spending is sitting in the banking system's balance sheet as retail deposits, which is a good thing. He says, retail deposits are sticky. What does sticky mean? They don't leave, they stay around. And stickier the deposit, the more willing banks are to swap reserves for treasuries, meaning they're going to take that cash and buy treasury securities from it, which we know that they do. Especially with a standing repo facility, which banks could start applying to get access starting on October 1st. Remember we've talked about how the standing repo was only available to dealers. Well, that's changing on August 31st. The open market trading desk at the Federal Reserve Bank in New York has released its expression of interest form for standing repo facility counterparties, depository institution with holdings of treasury agency debt and agency mortgage-backed securities greater than $5 billion or with assets greater than $30 billion may express interest in becoming a standing repo facility counterparty starting on October 1, which means the large banks where your money is deposited, which is being backed by debt that everyone thinks is going to default, is not, means that they could start buying longer term notes and bonds because they could go to the standing repo facility and convert that money to cash for 0.25% per year. And with 30-year yields at around 2.1%, that's a pretty good deal for the bank. So I want you to see that not only is US preparing to default on its taxpayers, but the Fed is taking extraordinary steps to make sure our debt is good. And that's one reason you know that we're probably not going to default on our debt. Now let's head back to China, because remember we talked about at length, multiple times ever, this Evergrande story. And I said, well, there's one cockroach. Well, there's probably two or three. Well, we just found a new cockroach. And what do we find out? Chinese luxury developer Fantasia fails to repay $206 million in U.S. dollar bonds. Now, why is this an issue? Because everyone said the great financial crisis, which keyed off with a couple of lenders going down, wasn't a big deal until it became one. Now we're starting to see the dominoes tip and fall here in China. So this is a serious deal. At the same time, the U.S. is facing all of this budget, a deficit ceiling mess that is dealing with a budget ceiling. So notice the missed payments took some market participants by surprise. Well, clearly they don't watch this show. So we see the company, which like China Evergrande Group based in Shenzhen, said late Monday it didn't pay the outstanding principal on a bond when it issued in 2016. And it originally sold for $500 million of its debt and earlier this year bought back some of its securities. And with that, we see the Chinese property bonds hammered by weak September sales and surprise default. Now, again, this is a surprise to people because what did I tell you? This is a confidence game. As soon as things change and people start to lose confidence in the real estate market, they're going to stop buying. And look what happened here. They're going to sell. They're going to get out of that debt. They're going to dump it at a loss. They're going to stop buying. And what do we see? Dozens of dollar bonds sold by Chinese real estate companies tumbled in price on Wednesday as people finally start to believe that maybe they're not going to get their money back, as shrinking apartment sales and an unexpected default have stoked fresh investor concerns about China's property developers, causing a steep sell-off in the dollar-denominated bonds. What an absolute shock. And then we look over to Bloomberg, where we see China's developers priced for a meltdown. Oh, hey, now we're actually getting serious that this could be a problem as contagion risks spread. And they go on to say the Chinese junk bonds were poised for their biggest sell-off in at least 8 years. And what you see now is yields are near a decade high. And I'm not suggesting you do this, but if you're looking for yield, you can get around 15% on Chinese property developer bonds. How about that? Let's head into the economic data, because now we're going to look and see if the economy is slowing. And you know, you start to tack on this situation in China with what's going on in the US, and you can see that the worst thing is that this debt ceiling issue is not faced. We go into a recession, and now we do not have stimulus. We don't have anything to get us out of it. And you want to see some pain. Well, that's what will likely happen. Now let's take a look at the economic data into Tuesday here, and what do we see going on with the market? The services PMIs came out, and what are we seeing? Services sector in Italy expanding at a slightly slower rate at 55. So remember, over 50 is expansion, and how far over is the rate of expansion? And under 50 is a contraction. 50 is unchanged. We look to Germany, slowing services sector, 60.8 to 56.2. How about Great Britain? Went from increase, so a little bit of an improvement, 55 to 55.4, but roughly Spain at the same rate as before. And producer prices continue higher in the Eurozone, going from 2.5% last month up 1.1 this month. The year-over-year rate change staggering 13.4%. Again, part of we talked about this is due to the dollar going higher and starting to move higher, which will create inflation in other parts of the world, giving their central banks the ability to start tapering at a time the U.S. may not be able to. How about exports and imports? You want to know if the U.S. economy is expanding? Well, you can look at exports, and you see they went from about 212.7 billion to 213.7, so up a little bit. Look at imports, still went up at 283 to 287. So it's showing that the U.S. economy from an export standpoint is starting to slow down. Imports increasing may lead to an inventory build. We want to see both of these expanding. The trade balance gets wider from 70.3 billion to minus 73.3. Now, why is that an issue? Is we can see here on a chart, the trade balance is at a near or at all-time record lows. And what does that mean for GDP? And you see here in red, GDP on a year-over-year against the total goods and services balance of payments. And as balance of payments go down, the GDP with a lag is going to head lower. So remember, people believe that we're going to continue to see robust growth. Well, probably not. Now, one thing we did miss from back on Monday is manufacturers' new orders. Now, why is new orders important? Because when we overlay the consumer price index in red and look at them both on a year-over-year rate of change, what we can see is as the rate of change in new orders slows, so too does the rate of growth in consumer prices. So looking for that to head lower, as everyone believes inflation is going to continue to go higher, the data suggests it's going to moderate. All right, let's come back to the U.S. data where we see the services PMI. Now we'll go to here. How about the ISM? In fact, we need to talk about all car and truck sales. We'll do that in a moment. But because you want to talk about slowing demand, you'll see it there. So let's look at the services sector. What are we looking for? Big increases in employment. We didn't see it. It went from 53.7 to 53. So it means employment expanded at a slightly slower rate. And as the Fed is hoping for a massive hiring spree, we'll see if that happens on Friday. New orders are up slightly, business activity up a bit, inventories shrinking, prices paid up a bit. So you're not seeing anything here that's looking really overly superbly growth oriented. Supplier deliveries are cooling off, new export orders a little bit lower. So we're not seeing anything here that says that there's a huge rebound in the services sector. But let's take a look at all truck sales tumbling and getting near their pandemic lows as truck sales go down. And how about car sales? Whoops, where's car sales? And you have to go back. Well, it's lowest in history, lower than it was in the pandemic. You have people not wanting to buy cars, obviously buying trucks and SUVs or truck-like things that are classified as trucks, but even that is falling. Is it a demand issue? Is it a supply issue? Well, soon enough, we will find out. Now let's continue on into the data today. And what do we find out? Big shocking negative number coming out of German factory orders went from 4.9 last month to minus 7.7. Where is that? Here you see German factory orders far worse than projected. And now you're looking at numbers we haven't seen since the pandemic occurred. So obviously some danger here coming out of Germany for the economy there is, again, everyone expects boom, boom, boom in the global economy. But you want to talk about rates being too high? Here's a perfect example. Mortgage applications for last week down 6.9% with refinance applications down 10. So it's telling you that buyers and homeowners are saying rates are too high. And again, you know, why do we talk about this? Because the view right now is that rates can only go up. But the fact of the matter is, if there's no demand for rates at a certain level, they must go down. Again, if you never heard this, think of you as a bank and you're lending money out, and you put out an offer to loan money and nobody comes to borrow it. Do you raise rates or do you lower them? I mean, it's no different than being in business. You put your product out for sale, no one comes and buys it. So you think, well, maybe the price is too low. If I raise it a bunch, people will buy it. No, what is the normal thing people do? Lower it. And so the market is speaking, saying rates are too high, and that is one of the reasons we're not seeing rates continue to go up despite sellers' best effort to do that. And of course, the big news today being crude oil inventories went up. Now, do keep in mind, this is not unusual for this time of year to see inventories rise. Crude oil inventories are still below their averages for this time of the year, so it's not a major deal from crude. But when you see gasoline inventories pop up again, this is not terribly unusual. But here's the issue that I'm going to challenge you and ask the question is, if normal times we should start to see some bills this time of year, is it normal when you have a lot of people coming off unemployment that should be out going back to work and doing jobs? Shouldn't they be out doing things and using fuel and oil? That's my view. I will see if these numbers continue to go up and up. If that is true, that means consumers are rejecting higher prices. But we do have some good news from the ADP. 568,000 jobs created, so it gives some hope that on Friday there's going to be a decent non-farm payroll report that everyone now believes will be the only thing that will keep the Fed from actually starting to taper its balance sheet. Will be on Friday, and this gives a green light for that. And what do we see? Large employers hired big, 390,000, 115 from midsize. And where was most of it? As we know, service producing jobs, although a decent number in goods producing, 102,000, and most of it in leisure and hospitality. So all eyes will be on the non-farm payroll report on Friday. And last but not least, it looks like Powell is most likely to keep the throne at the Fed as Biden backs Powell after Senator Elizabeth Warren intensifies her oppositions. And the Fed chairman, whose term expires in 4 months, has tried to quell a controversy over officials' investment activities. Two of them have retired or resigned, depending on which you would to think of it. But so far, President Biden said that he has confidence. When asked by a reporter if he had confidence in Mr. Powell, he says, thus far, yes. So no plans, at least from the president as this time, to get rid of Powell. Anyways, thanks for being fans. Thanks for supporting the show. And now you know who the government's really thinking about defaulting on, not the debt. It's you and I. And with that, I'll see you back on Friday. Thanks for watching. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information. It's not an investment or advice. This material is not to be construed as recommendation or solicitation by our selling security, financial instrument, or participate in any particular trading strategies. Real West Bear by Steve Van Meter, personal capacity. Pigeon Express's video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advising Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.